Something magic happens every time you go. You make the magic happen. The magic of Orioles baseball.
Hello and welcome to the Bass Draft, your number one source for sports gaming and everything in between. I'm your host, Jake Patterson, back from both going to and recovering from my friend's wedding in Virginia. And holy shit, we got a lot to talk about. Obviously, like, the Damian Lillard trade was massive. I'm not going to get too much into that because I don't expect to spend a whole lot of time talking about the NBA this season. I'm just kind of done with the NBA because I'm so done with the Sixers. But, yeah, the Bucks are going to be nuts this year, assuming Dame and Giannis can actually play together. But not going to get too deep into the weeds on that because feel the magic happen. Oh my God. It is a beautiful thing that the Orioles have completed their most successful regular season since 1980. 101 wins. They have not had a record this good since 14 years before I was even born. And I have been loving every minute of it, coming down the wire, realizing, oh, the Orioles are absolutely going to win the division. Getting a new stadium deal in the middle of what became win number 100 that more or less locked up the division. Getting a new stadium deal in the middle of a game against the Red Sox, who have haunted the Orioles with invading fans from Boston and the fucking traitors from Baltimore County, who grew up as Red Sox fans for some reason. Fucking traitors, the lot of you. But to get the announcement of a 30-year stadium lease extension, which, I mean, we all knew it was going to happen. It was just nice to actually get it signed. So maybe now John Angelos can sell the fucking team and we don't have to worry about his cheapness ruining the good vibes that this season has brought. Because, my God, it's fucking annoying having to worry about when the cheapness of the Angelos family is going to strike, despite the fact that they have plenty of money to support this team. Nope, not gonna let that ruin the vibes. Not gonna let that ruin the vibes. Because this is the best Orioles season that I have ever seen. And, like, I thought that about 2012. I thought that about 2014. And 2016 also happened until Buck decided to leave Zach Britton in the bullpen instead of bringing the best closer in baseball that year out to do his job against that asshole Jose Bautista. Oh my God, I hate that guy. I'm still mad about this 7 years later. You don't get to bat flip in the big moment if you do a dramatic bat flip when you draw a walk. I mean, he's retired now, and I don't have to hear his bitching about playing against the Orioles anymore, even though Adam Jones got hit by more Blue Jays pitchers, you asshole. But I think the Blue Jays are, let's go to today. Current score of the, the Blue Jays are in fact currently losing to the Twins. It is, as I'm recording this, the fourth inning just ended, and it is 2-0 Twins. So, and as I was recording this, the Rays have officially been eliminated by the Texas Rangers by a combined score in two games. I will remind you, at Tropicana Field, by a combined score of 11-1. So, Do with that information what you will. In a near empty Tropicana Field, the Rangers absolutely wrecked the Tampa Bay Rays 7-1. I still would take the Orioles against them. Just putting that out there, I would still take the Orioles against them because the Orioles are hot at exactly the right time. The offense woke back up and their pitching got its shit together. All at exactly the right time. Not having Felix Bautista for the rest of this year or all of next year is going to suck. But hey, they gave the man his extension. He has earned it. And I appreciate everything he has done for this team. But I just want to go back to the end of the season and how emotional that win against the Red Sox made me. Because, like, you have the young guys. You have, like, your Adley Rutschmans, your Gunnar Hendersons. These guys who knew how bad the Orioles situation was, because otherwise they would not end up on the Orioles. The Heston Kjerstads, all of these guys, they knew what they were getting into when they got drafted, but especially Gunnar, like by the time Adley got called up, things were already turning around for the Orioles, and then he turned them around even more by himself. But like the guys like Cedric Mullins, who had to play through some absolutely shit baseball. Like Cedric Mullins, Anthony Santander, these guys who had to play through some god-awful baseball. 110 losses just 2 years ago. Brandon Hyde, who had to sit there and watch just awful, awful baseball. I wish Trey Mancini could be a part of this because he was such a leader during that rebuild. But business is business, and he had to get traded. I wish it was still like open signing, so we could sign him away from the Cubs and put him on the playoff roster. Just to have him there, just to have the leadership of Trey Mancini heading into what very well could be a World Series run. First time I've said that out loud on this show, I think. Like, this could legitimately be a World Series run. They had a deficit in the best division in baseball, came back and won that division, and are red hot going into the playoffs, where they will get home field advantage. Also, because of a Billy Joel concert scheduled at M&T Bank Stadium, probably 2 years ago when they didn't expect the Orioles to be playing in the postseason in just 2 years. Like, I genuinely thought, like, this year would be last year. Like, stay in the fight until the very end and then, like, bow out with, like, a week left in the season. Like, get officially, like, finish with a winning record, but miss the playoffs. Like, I thought this season would be last season. But this season turned out to be the best season in 43 years. Like, they were still almost a decade away from even moving into Camden Yards in the first place. Like, they didn't move into Camden Yards until 1992. So Camden Yards has never seen a 100-win Orioles team. It's seen a lot of other historic moments, you know, 21-31. But Camden Yards, after 31 seasons, has never seen a 100-win Orioles team. It's seen a lot of very bad Orioles teams. It's seen a couple 100-loss Orioles teams. But this is her first 100-win Orioles team, and I'm just really happy. I was I did not expect to get choked up when the last out happened. Because, like, I expected it. And then it happened, and it was just like emotions just washed over me. It was a really cool moment. Because, like I mentioned, the guys who have been there since the beginning of the rebuild, the Brandon Hydes, the Cedric Mullins, the Anthony Santanders, the Ryan Mountcastles, like, the guys who were just stuck, like, good players who were just stuck playing putrid baseball. And then Adley got called up. Gunner got called up. Hall. John Means got it together. The Grayson Rodriguez. Like, all these guys finally all came together and became a World Series caliber baseball team in the space of just a couple years. Like, the fact that the Orioles got Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson in the same draft, and they're the two key pieces of the Orioles core now, because Gunnar Henderson's gonna win Rookie of the Year. Like, Gunnar Henderson's going to be American League Rookie of the Year. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, he's going to get MVP votes. He probably won't win the MVP, but he's going to get MVP votes as a rookie. That should basically give you the Rookie of the Year. John Means is probably going to get Cy Young votes. Felix Bautista might pick up a couple, too. I know he didn't get to finish out the season because he needs Tommy John, but, like, I have literally never experienced an Orioles team this good, because I was alive for Wire to Wire. Like, I was alive, but I'm pretty sure Wire to Wire happened in 1998, so I was, you know, three. I was 9 months old when 2131 happened. Like, it's a lot of the great moments of Orioles history either happened when I was too young to remember them, or just completely before I was born. All three World Series before I was born. Every 100-win season before this one, before I was born. So, yeah, it's nice to have a team that is being discussed as a World Series contender. And I don't give a shit what Fangraphs says, because Fangraphs said the Rays had a pretty good chance of winning the American League, and they just got absolutely destroyed by the Twins. The Rangers. So, I don't want to hear it. I genuinely don't want to hear shit from Fangraphs, because they were wrong about what the Orioles were going to do at the beginning of the season. I remember, what was it, a 1.3% chance to make the playoffs? And then I'll just say it again. They went and won the best division in baseball. The Yankees are bringing back Boone next year. Oh, man, that sounds like a full-on Joker laugh. Oh, my God. But that's worthy of a Joker laugh. That's fucking hilarious. Oh my God, they're bringing back Aaron Boone. He got the manager job because of one hit 25 years ago. No other qualifications, and he is proving that year in and year out, and it's beautiful. I bet Aaron Judge is regretting signing that fat contract with the Yankees. Other than the money in his wallet, but again, like, he could have gone back home. He's not from California, but he could have gone and played for the Giants and probably would have had even more money in his pocket. Probably not with California income tax. Anyway, I'm not going to come out and say the Orioles are going to win the World Series, because, like, I genuinely don't know how to tell if my team is World Series caliber, because I've never seen it. So I'm not going to come out and say it, but I'm going to say right here, right now, that the Orioles have a pretty damn good chance of at least making it. I think making the ALCS, probably against the Astros, is almost a guarantee. I don't want to completely guarantee it because, you know, baseball is weird, but I do want to put that out there that I think no matter who they play, the Orioles will win the ALDS. Winning the ALCS is another story. I think they're capable of doing it, but like winning the ALCS, that is another story entirely. And then winning the World Series, it all depends on if it's the Braves or the Phillies. And both of those outcomes will still be incredibly challenging for the Orioles to win. And if it is Orioles-Phillies, to my Flyers Twitter friends, I already did apologize on Twitter, but I want to apologize here again with my actual voice, not just text. I am sorry for how much you're going to hate me during an Orioles-Phillies World Series. Just putting that out there now. Because I'm pretty sure the regular season will either have started by then or be very, very close. Actually, is today the beginning of the NHL season? NHL season start 2023. Oh, it's on Friday. Okay. So yeah, the NHL season will be the NHL season will be well underway by well, not well underway, but it'll be a couple weeks in by the time the World Series rolls around. So yeah, That is just an apology to my Flyers fan friends. You're going to hate me for about a week and a half should an Orioles-Phillies World Series come to pass. But that's what I got for baseball. Let's... And after this, we're going to switch some gears and still sports. Only one gaming thing for this week, and that is coming at the end of the show. Switch some gears and talk college football. Coming up next, here on The Mashup. Hey, do you really like The Mashup and want to help support it even more?
Of course I do. You're so awesome.
Well, do I have good news for you. I now have a Barstool Sports Store affiliate link.
Oh, what the heck is that?
An affiliate link is a link that takes you directly to the Barstool store, but has some extra coding in it to let them know that I sent you, so I get some of the money from the sale in return.
That's so cool!
Yes, it is, and it helps me put out better and better content for you.
And maybe does enough to get Barstool's attention that they'll give me a job.
All you have to do is go to barstool-sports.pxf.io/themashup. That's barstoolsports.pxf.io/themashup and get some merch. Doesn't matter what you get, you'll be supporting me and the mashup. And you get a cool t-shirt, hoodie, flag, or whatever else you want in return. So go to barstoolsports.pxf.io/themashup today and help me grow this podcast even more. All right, let's switch over to the gridiron. Get into some college football. This was an interesting weekend because we did have a lot of like ranked matchups that were also conference games. Because we're getting into conference play and you're getting a few of those ranked versus ranked matchups. Like Texas, Kansas, 3-24, where Texas got scared by Kansas and then ran away with the game late. Let's see, what would the 7-10-7 2013, 2014, 2021. Okay, yeah. So Kansas made it scary. Kansas did in fact make it a little scary, but Texas did manage to pull away, and honestly, I would start turning some eyes towards the Texas Longhorns to be a semi-legit contender. I don't know what for, but like, they beat Bama at Bama. They've kicked the crap out of everyone else on their schedule. They do have Oklahoma this week, but that actually should be a really good game. Is it at the Cotton Bowl? It's at the Cotton Bowl, but that's in Dallas. That's effectively a home game. So that's actually gonna be a really good game. What? That's on ABC. So that's the noon game on ABC. Maryland, Ohio State is the noon game on Fox. That's Maryland's a 20-point dog. Honestly, Maryland as a 20-point dog is intriguing to me solely from a betting standpoint. I don't think Maryland will win that game, but I think they can cover a 20-point spread. I genuinely believe Maryland can cover a 20-point spread this weekend. I do not expect them to win. Do not expect them to win that game. Do not bet the money line. That plus 750 is intriguing, but it's plus 750 for a reason. But Oklahoma, Texas should... Oklahoma, Texas is absolutely the most interesting game this weekend. And LSU, Missouri. Both the most interesting games are noon kickoff. Notre Dame, Louisville might be fun. Ish. Notre Dame, Louisville could be at least interesting. I think Notre Dame are better than Louisville. But let's talk about this week. Because one of the more interesting games was actually not a ranked matchup. It was a top 10 team on the road against an unranked team who was just previously ranked before getting their asses handed to them by the Oregon Ducks. Which that also is a point that I want to emphasize with this game. Both teams, the Ducks and the Trojans, Oregon and USC, managed almost identical scores. 42 for the Ducks and 48 for the Trojans. The Ducks gave up 6. The Trojans gave up 41. Now, I know they were up big. Like, USC was up big, and they let Colorado come back. But Oregon was up big, too. They never let Colorado come back. Like, they beat them so bad, they dropped from 19 to out of the polls. So there is that. So I think the actual most interesting takeaway from USC-Colorado has nothing to do with either USC or Colorado, and it has everything to do with Oregon holding that Colorado offense to just 6 points. Was that a touchdown with a missed extra point, or was it a field goal? Okay, it was a touchdown with a blocked extra point. Yeah, I was, you know, at a wedding while this game was happening, so didn't get to totally keep up with what was happening. But, and I don't know what the hell Colorado's offense was at the end of that game. It's like, guys, you know you're losing, right? With the clock winding down and no timeouts. Why are you the ones running the ball? Like, why are you the ones running the ball in this situation? You should absolutely be passing, and you should be passing towards the sidelines. You should not be running the ball straight up the middle, because all that did was kill clock. And they they tried to make the play for the onside kick instead of, oh God, it was so bad. Like, an otherwise good team just forgetting how to run a proper 2-minute offense. It wasn't even a 2-minute offense. They got it to a situation where it needed to be a 2-minute offense. Like, they had a 4-minute. They had 4 minutes. Why were they running the ball so much? Was Sanders arm hurt or something? It sure didn't look like it when he made the touchdown pass. I don't know what Colorado's play calling at the end of that game was, but it cost them the game. Like, obviously their defense just crapping the bed and Caleb Williams being Caleb Williams early in the game didn't help, but they had a chance. Momentum was in their favor. They were at home. And then they just started running the ball despite not having any timeouts and being down with the clock running out. I do not understand the decision making on that Colorado sideline at the end of that game. I also don't understand what the hell happened to Duke's defense on that one play where Notre Dame broke out a huge run and their offense just, like, their offense just forgetting how to offense in the first half, really. Like, Duke should have won that game. Everything about that game said Duke should have won. Like, everything about the eyeball test of that game said Duke should have been the team to win. And yet they didn't, because football is weird. And there was a little bit more time left on the clock, but not a lot. They did almost exactly what, like, Notre Dame did almost exactly what Ohio State did to them a week earlier. And I think that's kind of funny, but that is a true triangle of hate for me right there. Like, don't like Duke, don't like Notre Dame, don't like Ohio State. It's just a matter of which one do I hate more in the moment. But yeah, last week was an interesting weekend. Especially when we all thought Penn State might lose to Northwestern, when, you know, they looked like hot garbage in the first half. And if you practice without music to simulate how shitty the atmosphere is for a road game, and then you go into the half tied at 10, something's wrong. Clearly, James Franklin lit a rather large fire under the asses of his offense in the second half, because they scored 31 points in the second half. A more than half of the game's 54 points came from Penn State in the second half. And Northwestern also just completely forgot how to play football, which seems to be a common occurrence in Evanston, Illinois, that the hometown team tends to just forget how to play football. And this has been a thing for several decades now. But yeah, I think it's time to start looking at Michigan and maybe Texas as teams that could possibly beat Georgia. Because Georgia did have, you know, a little bit of a scare there at Auburn. They won, but, you know, still made it interesting. The first, like, real challenge they've faced all season, and they only win by 7. Their schedule once again gets super easy until they play Ole Miss and Tennessee back to back, because Ole Miss is looking like a pretty good team this year. Had that absolutely bonkers game against LSU. Just like pure SEC fun, just back and forth all game long, with two well above sub. I wouldn't call them top tier, because they're not. They're good, but they're not national title contenders. Two, like, well above obviously well above average, because they're both in the top 25, and I think they both moved up. Or no, LSU dropped 10 spots for losing to Ole Miss on the road. AP voters, that's just mean. Like, they lost a rivalry game on the road on a last second play. They don't deserve to drop 10 spots. Obviously, I think they should drop, but jeez. Like, a rivalry game on the road, I don't know if that's worthy of a 10 spot drop in the poll. I really don't. But this is why I don't have an AP vote. And also, stuff like this. To all the national writers who have been disrespecting the Liberty Flames, I would like to kindly ask you to actually watch one of their games and compare them to JMU, who you seem to be obsessed with. JMU are 5-0, but they're being real dicks about it. And their coach is just pulling out his phone on the sideline to show the refs a replay, which, last time I checked, would very much fall under the definition of unsportsmanlike conduct. So, yeah, just, you know, put some respect on the Flames. A couple people have started to do it, thank God. The people who are still using the BCS model, like, even though it's not really a thing anymore, like, the BCS model has Liberty at 12. So, you know, just keep that in mind. I know their strength and schedule's god-awful, but so's JMU's. And you're fawning all over how great they are when they've been scared to play Liberty for, you know, almost a decade. Because I remember them backing out of that game in 2015 with only about 5 months notice. And screwing up Liberty's entire schedule for the 2015 season, as well as forcing Seafall and Parents Weekend to be combined into one weekend, which again, as a student, was really fucking miserable. Like, oh yeah, we got the parents of current students and the parents of future students, along with all of those future students on campus for a single weekend. This was 8 years ago, and I'm still very mad about it. So, JMU, if you're gonna talk crap on Twitter, stop pretending your athletic department isn't scared to play us and hiding behind the political correctness optics of it all. Because you were more than happy to schedule that game in 2015 and then back out 4 months later. And never even consider taking a game again. And, you know, Coastal going behind our backs to let you and Old Dominion into the Sun Belt instead of, you know, their oldest rival. Their oldest, I don't know if we're Coastal's oldest rival, but sure feels like it. You know, a team they actually have history with. But, you know, that's all water under the bridge. We made it to CUSA. And you'll probably win the Sun Belt this year, because the Sun Belt is not very good. And Well, we'll see you in a bowl game when you can't really back out of one of those without looking like a coward now, can you? But that's what I got for college football. Up next, we'll stay with the football and get into some NFL action, which comes at the end of another very good weekend for me. It's coming up next. You're on the Mashup. All right, let's talk some football, shall we? Well, we're still talking football. Pro football. There's the distinction. This was a really good weekend for me. Liberty had a bye week, so I didn't have to worry about them at all. And then on Sunday, the Ravens returned to their 2019 form and beat the crap out of the Cleveland Browns. In Cleveland. With a very good performance from both Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews. Which sounds very 2019 to me. And I'm very happy it happened. Because, you know, it's nice to beat the Browns in Cleveland. Especially after losing to the Colts at home in some god-awful weather. And after you played like hot garbage and people were questioning Todd Monken as offensive coordinator, not anymore. Because when you go on the road and hang 28 points on the statistically best defense in the NFL and hold their offense to only 3 in turn, and, you know, score more in the first half than the rest of the division did combined. And that's actually true. Like, look at the scores. The Ravens scored 21 points in the first half of that game against the Browns. Combined across their 3 games, the rest of the AFC North managed a grand total of 12 points. 6 of them from the Pittsburgh Steelers. And none of which came from touchdowns. So the Ravens were the only AFC North team to score a touchdown this weekend, and they scored 4 of them. And not that it really matters, but I was, both me as a Ravens fan and a fantasy manager of both Lamar Jackson and Mark Andrews, was very happy with that particular performance on Sunday. And I just got to say it, that like stretch of time from like the end of last week through to, or middle of last week through to Sunday, is maybe the best stretch of time in Baltimore sports ever. Cause like with the 2 Ravens Super Bowls, the Super Bowl happens in February. There's no baseball happening. Like, pitchers and catchers don't report until after the Super Bowl is over. So there was no, and, I mean, the Orioles were good in 2012, and then a Ravens Super Bowl happened. But still, the end of the Orioles 2012 season and the Ravens Super Bowl in the 2012-2013 season was still separated by, what, 4 months? Yeah. Because season 1 have ended October, Super Bowl in February. It was still separated by 4 months. This was a stretch of a couple days where the Orioles signed a new lease, got their first 100-win season, and clinched the division. Got their first 100-win season in 43 years, and clinched the division all on the same night against the Red Sox. And then a few days later, the Ravens beat the crap out of the Browns, and the Texans, the Steelers and the Bengals both got embarrassed by teams that, frankly, on paper, the Bengals should not be losing to the Titans by 24 points, even if it is in Nashville. But I was only half joking when I was wishing nothing but misery on the Karen Cats and their toxic ass fan base at the beginning of the season. But it seems like it worked. They're 1-3. The Bengals are 1-3, dead last in the division, with, sure, a win against the Rams, but a close win, getting absolutely obliterated by the Browns. Only losing to the Ravens by 3, but not looking good in the process at all. And doesn't get any easier. They play the Cardinals next week. That's pretty easy. The Cardinals aren't very good. Then they get the Seahawks. They're not beating the Seahawks. Given what the Seahawks just did to the Giants, they're not beating the Seahawks. Then they get their bye. And then they get to go to San Francisco. Considering what the Niners did to the Steelers at the beginning of this season, I don't have much hope for what the Karen Cats are going to accomplish at Levi Stadium. So, yeah, they might win one game in the month of October. And November doesn't get off to a great start either, where they play the Bills in prime time. That's not going to be pretty either, because I think the Dolphins are better than the Bengals this year, and we all saw what the Bills just did to the Dolphins. It was in Buffalo. I thought it was in Miami. I was wrong. The game was in Buffalo. Imagine what they're going to do to the Bengals in Buffalo. Ew. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to be a bloodbath, and I think it's absolutely hilarious. Because like I've said on this show before, I have had nothing but negative experiences with Bengals fans. And like I said at the beginning of the season, I wish them nothing but abject misery, because it is well and truly what they deserve. And I can't wait to see what the Bills do to them in Buffalo. And then I'm pretty sure they come to Baltimore a week later. And it also won't be pretty. Like at all. Do they come to Baltimore a week later? No, they play the Texans at home. Which, again, considering what the Texans just did in the Steelers. And then they come to Baltimore, which, again, is oh, that's a Thursday night game. Oh, God, that's a Thursday night game. Oh, no. Have fun with that one, Karen Cats.
Have fun with that one.
But I mentioned the Giants. Remember when ESPN was trying to convince everyone Daniel Jones was technically a Manning? That was so weird. Everyone was acting like this guy was actually related to the Manning family. He's not. He kind of looked like Eli, but he's not related to them. And ESPN was sure as hell trying to act like it, and it was really weird. But that whole year, like the whole Daniel Jones and Mac Jones too, when everyone was trying to act like, oh, Daniel Jones kind of walked like Bill Belichick to the podium. Oh no, he's going to be the next Tom Brady. He sucks too. And it's beautiful. Like all these guys that ESPN like overhyped, if we're being honest, just absolutely sucking. And then like the best people in the NFL are the Heisman winner, who everyone thought should switch to running back. The guy who played at Wyoming. And the guy who played at Texas Tech are among the best quarterbacks in the NFL. And the guy who played at Bama and everyone acted like was going to be the next Tom Brady is absolutely freaking terrible. I just think it's genuinely very funny. But speaking of that guy who played at Texas Tech and his team, can we stop with this Taylor Swift crap? Like, NFL, I thought you were past ripping off baseball. I thought that was way back in your history, like 100 years ago when you ripped off their names and played in their stadiums. Can you, like, not try to pander to a fan base who will never care about football? Like, seriously, can we stop with, like, the Taylor Swift fan pandering? I lived through pandering to all the girls who thought Derek Jeter was hot already. I don't want to do it again. I don't want an already obnoxious, toxic fan base, toxic, obsessive fan base, latching on to another toxic fan base like the Chiefs. Well, no, because all Chiefs fans act like that. I thought it was kind of just the bandwagoners, but no, it's all of them. With their straw man arguments and their entitlement. Those are two fan bases that do not need to merge. And Taylor Swift fans will never actually give a fuck about football. Stop trying to pander to them. Oh my God. Like, yeah, Travis Kelce's dating Taylor Swift. Okay, they're both rich, they're both famous, these things happen. But, like, the Taylor Swift fans who, like, parasocial relationship doesn't even begin to describe it. It's kind of scary. And, I really, like, I don't want this to come off as bad, but I do believe in a limited form of gatekeeping. Truly. Like, a limited form of gatekeeping is okay. Because I really don't want the Taylor Swift fans who don't actually give a fuck about football pretending to give a fuck about football because Taylor Swift is dating one of the tight ends from the Chiefs. Like, I really don't. Dealt with that with all the girls who are obsessed with Jeter. Don't want to do it again as an adult in a different sport. Like, I just don't want to deal with it. So can we stop with the Taylor Swift pandering? Because we're only 2 weeks in and it's already really freaking old. But yeah, that's what I got for the NFL. That went places. But up next, we're going to really switch gears and talk about some Call of Duty. COD Next is in a few hours after this episode drops. So my predictions are going to become outdated real quick, but still going to put what I want to see out there. What's coming up next here on the Mashup? All right, final segment before we wrap things up. Talking about Call of Duty. I thought I was done with this damn series, but they keep pulling me back in. Modern Warfare 3 actually looks good. And I hate to say it, because, like, the last two games have both been incredibly disappointing. And just not really all that fun to play. But Sledgehammer seems to be working their way up. Maybe they'll redeem themselves after Vanguard, because Vanguard was not good. So I'm taking everything with a massive grain of salt because Sledgehammer has to earn my trust back. But also, it's pretty clear they didn't want to make a World War II game. And they hired a bunch of writers who aren't experienced in heavy emotional storytelling. And you could have just done the post-war story. That would have been so much better. If Vanguard's campaign was A, longer, and B, the squad, like already established, you don't do the flashback missions or anything. You just say, these guys are a team brought together from the Allies of Nazi hunters. And, like, you could still do the them bonding storyline. Like, you could do the them bonding storyline, and you could have the big finale where you switch between all four of them attacking, I don't know, instead of the Berlin airport, make it, like, a compound somewhere in middle of nowhere Argentina. Like, do something like that. Like, that would have been more fun, I think. But that's a game from 2 years ago. So not going to get too much into what I wanted from Vanguard. We're going to get into what I want from MW3, because we've seen a lot of the leaks and the trailers with, like, the OG Modern Warfare 2 maps, like the 2009 version, coming back without the god-awful changes Raven made for Warzone. Like, Terminal is Terminal, High Rise is High Rise, all the way down the list of 16 maps. And launching with 16 maps is impressive for a modern Call of Duty, which is kind of sad to say that it took 14 years to get back to launching with 16 maps, but, you know, Activision getting Activision. But what I'm genuinely hoping to see from COD Next, from my perspective when I'm recording this tomorrow, is I want to see a return to form. Because Call of Duty is an arcade shooter. It is not this slow-paced, camp in a corner like you're playing a BR, even though you can respawn, game. It's really not that. It is fast-paced, and it is stupid. Like, last year I was like, oh, hey, you're getting rid of these stupid gimmicks, like reload canceling, because I do think reload canceling is kind of dumb, just because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, even in a game where you got the stupid movement, I feel like reload canceling is just too much of a stretch. But then they did all this other crap, like had soccer players, streamers, Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, and now Spawn as playable characters. It's kind of hard to say you're hoping for realism, but that's just me. So if you're gonna be stupid, fully embrace the stupid. Don't add stupid later. Fully embrace the stupid from the beginning. But keep it only in multiplayer. Keep campaign like an action movie. Not like, campaign should be an action movie that is about a war, not a war movie. There is a distinction. Because Call of Duty World War II's campaign was a war movie. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 from 2009, that campaign was an action movie that happened to be about war. There's a big difference. Actually, no, it's more like World at War was the war movie. Modern Warfare 2 2009 edition was the action movie that happened to be about war. I want that tone from campaign. I want that tone from campaign. I want that tone in multiplayer. That is what I want. So I want to see a return to form of the fast-paced, stupid, and colorful. Because I'm tired of everything being shades of brown and gray. Like, I know I can play Halo to get to get more color in my shooters, but come on, it's Call of Duty. Like, let it be a little bright. Like, the Black Ops maps are all so much better because they have freaking color. Like, the best Call of Duty maps of all time are the ones that are colorful. Terminal is colorful. Raid, colorful. Hijacked, Express. All of these maps have one thing in common: color. So I want to see that. And I know Activision will never do this, but I want to see less emphasis on Warzone. People are only the biggest streamers are still playing it, and even then just barely. But I've made my opinion on Battle Royales very clear on this show, so not going to go too deep into that, but no one likes Warzone anymore. Stop trying to push it. No one likes it anymore, and the people who claim to like it are liking a nostalgic period, are liking the nostalgia of a period of time no one should be nostalgic for. Like, I'm not nostalgic for April of 2020. I don't know why people act like Warzone was a good game because it came out at exactly the right time. As a free game that came out before no one could go anywhere for, 2 years or a year. Because I stopped giving a crap in May of 2021. But Warzone is driven by nostalgia for a period of time that should not generate nostalgia. And that is one of the hottest takes I will ever drop on this show about Call of Duty. But I think everyone else needs to realize that. I think people are starting to. I've been on this train for 2 years that Warzone isn't actually all that good and never was. It's just colored by the fact that everyone was playing it because that's all they could do. Because it was a new game that was free that came out right before quarantine. That's the only reason why people liked it. If 2020 was an otherwise normal year, other than being the start of a new decade and unfortunately an election year, if 2020 was an otherwise normal year, like 2020 just was another 2019, everything stayed the same from what happened in 2019. It's just new events. Warzone would not have survived past Modern Warfare Remake. It wouldn't. And I'm tired of pretending like OG Warzone in Verdansk was actually good. Verdansk was a shit map with too many dark corners to hide in, a terrible meta, terrible gameplay, and overall just really bad design. But I want to see less emphasis on Warzone. And even in multiplayer, get rid of all the stupid noob pandering shit. Like, if you don't want to show up on the minimap when you shoot your gun, put a suppressor on it. If you don't want your footsteps to make any noise, run Ninja or Dead Silence or whatever the heck the perk is going to be called. I think it's going to be like shoes. So, just run the shoes that give you Ninja. If you want to play stealthy, there is a build to play stealthy. It's called put a silencer on your gun and run the Ninja perk. There you go. Like, if I want to play a shooter for people who don't like shooters, I'll re-download Fortnite and play that. Because that's a shooter for people who don't like shooters. Plain and simple. I don't want that in COD. Because like I said, limited gatekeeping. Because anyone can play COD. I would not stop anyone from playing COD if they want to give it a try. But if they want to be good at it, they have to put in the work to be good at it. Like, there has to be some kind of skill expression in the game. Like, not everyone has to learn how to do all the crazy movement stuff, but you should know. You should be able to show up on a minimap when you shoot an unsilenced weapon, and you should be able to make your footsteps quiet with a perk if you choose to do so. Like, no more sound whoring. Just get rid of all of that noob pandering shit. It's not needed. It's really not. Because I sucked at Call of Duty for a long time. I'm still not great. I still had a lot more fun playing games like Modern Warfare 2 in 2009, Black Ops 1, Modern Warfare 3. I still had a lot more fun in those games than I have in any of the modern CODs except for Cold War. Cold War kind of gets a little bit closer to that territory, but not all the way. Because it still had its issues. The movement was way too slow. And the AK-74U was super overpowered. I ran that gun, but it was really overpowered. Like, admit it, Treyarch, you know that gun was stupid. But before we wrap up the show today, I do want to join the entire Call of Duty, and honestly, most of the esports community in congratulating Nadeshot and his wife Haley, who just announced earlier today that they are having a baby. So, congrats to the two of them. And the video they released is really funny because you get to see Nadeshot be like kind of genuinely upset that they're having a girl for a few seconds. Like watch the video. It's actually really wholesome because it's like a highlight video of their relationship, and then it gets into the pregnancy stuff. It's a really sweet video. Whoever edited it did a really good job. But yeah, congrats to Nadeshot and his wife Haley on welcoming their first child in a few months, because they said the due date was in January. So yeah, that's what I got for the show today. It was a happy show today. We got me excited about Baltimore sports. Got a pregnancy announcement for one of my favorite streamers that I'm just talking about. Obviously, I didn't announce it myself. But yeah, this was a happy show today. But that's it for this week. Hope you all enjoy it. Hope you all enjoy the rest of your week. And I will see you guys next time.